Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me is...
Greg Webster.
Hello, Greg.
Hey, Jay. I'm pretty excited because I finally got my core set and my MODOK and my Hulk, so I've got actual materials.
So, have you had a chance to play a game yet with the?
Models? No, I've let's see. So the Friday was November 15th. That was the release day. I went out. I grabbed everything. I did my best to assemble everything, and then I went out and I demoed the game on Saturday and Sunday at a couple local stores. So I think I've demoed it 6 times, but usually what I do is I, like, step out after round 2 or 3 and just let the people play it.
Right.
Because I haven't played any real games with it yet. But it's been a lot of fun to demo it and show it off. And
yeah, I've been doing a lot of demos as well.
Yeah, and I had some locals show up that I haven't seen in a while because, you know, they're getting interested. So lots of real positivity. I think Houston is pretty much sold out of Crisis Protocol right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, like all the stores. I don't think any of the stores ordered
heavy enough.
Sorry, Alexa decided she wanted to talk. Yeah, sorry about that. But
oh.
Yeah, no, none of the stores really ordered really heavily. And so I think last I saw at one store, they had like 1 or 2 MODOKs left, which is sad because
you would have thought that of all stores, like Asgard would have had like stacks of product.
I know. Yeah. It's
for the listeners who don't know. So in episode 1, Will Pagani, the lead designer, was someone we interviewed. He used to own a game store in Houston called Asgard. And so,
it's Will Pagani's old store. And, you know, it's passed hands, obviously.
Yeah.
When he moved to Seattle. But, yeah, it's, I was a little, you know, like, aw. I will say that, like, everybody at Asgard is getting down for this. So it's pretty exciting.
So I guess a few quick things about the launch. First of all, we both did some play of the game, some testing of the game before it launched, but and we can't really talk much about that. But how it was interesting to me how big of a difference it made being able to have like the actual miniatures and have the actual components and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And how it definitely has an impact on how much fun you're having when you're doing it. And I was curious if you had kind of a similar experience.
You know, the thing that really stood out to me was how much fun it was to have the terrain out and slowly throw it off the board and like beat up everybody. I've been playing with proxy stuff. So I have like, you know, laser cut bases that I had someone make for me, like paper terrain, and like, you know, little stickers we do in Sharpie, and we have proxy dice, and then just like having real dice is amazing, and all the art assets are so great. I really love it. I was surprised that all of the crisis cards come with matching tokens. I just feel like little things like that really bump up the quality. Like the fact that when I'm playing, you know, the Skrulls infiltrating, there's those little like handsome guy tokens that flip over to be a Skrull. I was just like, that's amazing. It really just makes the game feel that much more thematic and comic booky and fun.
Yeah, I'd agree. So a couple other release related things of note. I do still have the product in stock at discountgamesinc.com. Those who are in the Facebook groups or are friends with me or follow me on Twitter, you would have seen like photos of like stacks of product and then a day later, like stacks of packages going out. And so, that was pretty cool to, I guess, kind of see that flow of product going out to people. And, I'm excited for people to be getting their games. One other note on, about product. We initially thought that the New York City Terrain Pack was going to be released on launch date. They had some delays with it. And so its official date now is December 6th. So we do have that up for pre-order on discountgamesinc.com, along with the rest of the items that have been announced so far. They have, just so everyone is aware, they kind of have been, they'll announce items and they kind of announce, you know, two or three items at the same time. And so the assumption is that those items will be a wave of items that all release together. But so our guess, for example, is that, you know, wave two will be sometime in December, we're hoping, but we don't have an official date. And wave two would be stuff like Black Panther and Killmonger, etc. Yep, Venom. And so we don't have, the only thing we currently have a release date for is the New York City Terrain Pack. We don't have a release date currently for the game mats or for basically any of the future waves yet. And usually the way that Alliance works / Asmodee works is that usually they'll announce it, you know, months in advance, and you'll generally have kind of a rough idea, like we're guessing that wave two will probably be December, wave three will probably be January, etc. And then a couple of weeks before the actual release date, we'll know, okay, this is what the release date will be for these products. So that's kind of how the releases are going to work for Crisis Protocol. So the character that we're going to talk about this time is Spider-Man. And
we need to be specific. It's Spider-Man Peter Parker.
Peter Parker, right? That's right. That's true.
Because we do know that the first character that actually has an alter ego that matters is going to be, we have Spider-Man Peter Parker and Spider-Man Miles Morales.
Yeah. So do you have your cards?
Yes, I do.
In front of you. Do you want to read off Spider-Man's abilities?
I would love to. Spider-Man is a 5 stamina on his healthy side. He has a long movement. He is size 2. He's threat 4. He has defensive 3 for everything. So he's defense 3 for physical, energy, and mystical attacks. His first attack is a strike attack, which as we go on, I'm noticing the strikes are all the same, except for a few characters that have, like Captain America has a better strike than everyone else. But he has the normal strike attack, which is range 2, 5 power, 0 cost, and then it generates power equal to the damage dealt. He has impact webbing, which is a range 4, strength 4 attack that costs 0 power. And after he makes this attack, he gains 1 power. And then it has a wild trigger that is push, where if he hits you and it gets a wild, if the target character is size 2 or less, before damage is dealt, you can push him away short. So that's a nice chance of pushing someone. He then has an energy attack called Taser Webs. This is range 3, strength 6. It costs 2 power to use, but if it deals 1 damage or more, after it's resolved, the target character gains the stun special condition. So this is a really useful attack to give the stun special condition. Very easily, because you don't need a wild trigger, you just need to do at least 1 damage. And to remind people, stun is the special effect where if you would gain power, you can only gain 1 power from the effect. So if I do 6 damage to you, you still only gain 1 power from that 6 damage, because it's 1 effect causing the damage. He has 2 really interesting superpowers, Webline. is that you can push an enemy character within four towards him short. A character can be pushed by this superpower only once per turn, and it costs two power. He has Webapult, which is a three-cost superpower that lets you either pick an interactive terrain or an enemy character of size two, and it has to be within three, and then you can throw it short. This Webapult can only be used once a turn. And I think that's a really amazing superpower, which is why it's limited to once a turn. He has two passive abilities. One is Wall Crawler, of course, so he can, when he moves, he counts as being size five, so terrain won't slow him down. And then he has Spider Sense, where whenever he's defending against a physical attack, an energy attack, or he's making a dodge roll because someone threw terrain at him, he can reroll two of his defense dice or his dodge dice. His injured side is exactly the same. He still has five stamina, and nothing changes on his card when he's injured.
So, real quick, I wanted to point out a couple things about Webline and about Webapult.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first thing with Webline is that it's easy to... So, it says a character can be pushed by this superpower only once per turn. That doesn't mean that you can't use this power multiple times in the round. It just means it can't be versus the same character. And so there's a lot of times where I've seen people, you know, use Webline against a character, move it, have Spider-Man move his long movement, and use it against a different character. Mm. And it's something that's super strong. Another thing to remind with Webapult, This is a rule that, in my opinion, is very easy for you to misunderstand or not get the rules correct on initially. But it's important to understand that if you are throwing the character, then you would be measuring that short from the character you're throwing. And if you're throwing an item, you would be measuring that short from Spider-Man himself. And so that's an easy rule, like I said, to potentially... get tripped up on, but it kind of makes sense when you think about it, because, you know, let's say that you were throwing an object, and if they had the rule for that, that you were measuring off the object instead of off the character throwing, you could have some objects being thrown like clear across the board at enemy people. And so I think part of the reason why they did that was a game balance, some game balance issues with it. So
yeah, I think it creates a lot of really weird shenanigans if you throw terrain from the terrain.
Right.
And you kind of get into effects where you can daisy chain terrain throwing. And it also means that, like, Spider-Man is one of the reasons Spider-Man is so good is that he can throw things three away. Not many other characters get to grab terrain pieces from so far away.
Right. And it's also important to notice that there's a lot of versatility that Webapult can be a character or a terrain feature.
Yeah.
If you look at, for example, Ultron, his superpower, you don't have that versatility. You have to pick a terrain feature. And so that's...
Yeah, it seems like most throws are only on terrain, not characters. So I can see Spider-Man being really cool to throw someone off of an objective and make them hit another character.
Right.
And then you're probably doing one damage automatically to your target, and then one or two damage to the other character, and it wasn't even at one of your attacks. I kind of want to talk about something that I noticed, which was there on Facebook groups, there's a good number of people who think Spider-Man isn't worth his threat for. And it's because they seem to be focused on just his attacks.
So, yeah, I don't want to, disparage anyone, but these people are just wrong.
They're absolutely wrong. And I think it's, like I was saying, I think it's just because they're like, oh, look at his three attacks. Well, he doesn't do a ton of damage. And it's like, but his highest cost attack is taser webs for two. He's not an attacker. And the other side is taser webs is actually really good. Stunning is very important, I think.
So one of the things that I guess a comparison that I would make about it is that, you know, if like, who's a character that you would consider, like, kind of a beat stick that people currently like in the game?
I think people are looking at Captain Marvel and Iron Man as the beat sticks.
Okay.
Maybe that's just my opinion, but...
Alright, so I think in a way, to make a magic analogy, Captain Marvel might be like this Shivan dragon or a big, you know, big green stompy creature in magic, and Spider-Man would be more like a plain blue in magic that has, you know, you're using subtlety, you're using tricks, you're using control aspects, and both of those are very good, and both of those can win you games. You just have to adapt your playstyle to maximize which character you're doing. If you try to play Spider-Man like he's a big stompy creature, then, you know, you're going to fail. And so, you know, I think that it just takes the right mindset. And honestly, setting aside Captain America and Red Skull, because they're the two leaders and they're a little bit of a special case. But if you look at the other four threat characters that are in the core box, so we have Spider-Man, Captain Marvel, Ultron, and that's it.
Yes.
So of those three, I think that Spider-Man's probably my favorite, and I could probably make pretty strong arguments as to why I think he's strongest of the three.
I want to hear your arguments. I don't necessarily agree with you, but I want to hear them.
Okay, so here's my thought process with it. Really, there's two or three arguments that go with it. One is that really this game is a scenario-focused game, and if you are concentrating too much on beating down your opponent, then you're going to be at a disadvantage. And the scenario plays that you can do with Spider-Man, in my opinion, are really impressive. And part of the reason for that is his long movement tool will allow him to get all over the place, to be picking up and interacting with scenario objectives, and also pushing or throwing people that are securing stuff, or, you know, et cetera, so that you're able to start getting the win in the scenario. And so I think that it's really easy until you start, like, playing multiple games, and if you start really focusing in on scenario and trying to get points and forcing your opponent off of objectives, et cetera, that you'll start to realize how powerful that is. Another reason, and this kind of ties into what I already said, but of those three characters, he's the one who has a long movement tool. I think that that's a pretty significant advantage. And then I think that, finally, I think that another thing that I really like about him is I think that rerolls are going to be one of the key, really important abilities that people are going to end up starting to decide or realize are some of the strongest abilities that you can have with a character. And so I think that he doesn't have, you know, stellar stats of getting up in 4 or 5 on his defensive stuff, but he also doesn't have low ones that are down to 2. And I think that spider senses is going to end up being something that is going to end up being a really strong ability.
I can see that, yeah. You know, and it's funny because you kind of talk about his strengths at holding objectives. I see him as being stronger because he's better at keeping your opponent from holding objectives.
Right, yeah.
Webline and Webapult to me are all about getting characters off of secure. Move along, definitely. I love the idea of being able to grab an objective and then run away in order to keep the objective and keep it safe.
Right.
I think Taser Webs is cheap and it puts stun on people very easily. And I think, like, especially, you know, if you're going against Ultron and you're worried about Age of Ultron, if you put it on Crossbones or, you know, someone that you really don't like, if you put on Crossbones or Captain Marvel, it becomes just so much more effective because you really don't want them to generate more power. I just think it's a really he's got a lot of denial ability, which fits with your blue Magic the Gathering analogy pretty well too.
Yeah.
So I absolutely agree.
A few other things that I think are noteworthy about it is that, so first of all, Webline, it costs 2 energy for him to do that superpower. But if he's with Captain America on the Avengers, unless there's something that ends up making him lose power, if he started the round on 0 power, he would get 1 at the start of the round. Mm-hmm. Captain America's leadership ability would reduce it by 1. And so even if you're starting at 0, you're going to be able to do Webline for 1 every round. And so I think that's important and noteworthy to when evaluating him, is that he can always get a Webline going if he's with Captain America.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that is... I think Webline and Webapult are also, like, worth, you know, talking about. He should probably be with Captain America over Red Skull.
Right.
He's not really dealing... he's not dealing damage a lot, and sometimes with him it's more about trying to impact webbing, push people, or taser web them, so...
Yeah, and one other thing to note with rules, with taser webs, is that that stun special condition will get applied after the damage is dealt with taser webs.
Yes.
So that's an easy rule to make a mistake on. So just be aware of that.
Yeah, and I think all of the special conditions apply after the attack is resolved. I have seen that misplayed. And stun really does matter, because you can gain like 3 power and then be stunned.
Right.
So that is an important one. I do think one of his weaknesses is that he's not too difficult to daze or knock out.
Mm-hmm.
His defensive abilities are interesting, because 3 is an average defense, and then with Spider Sense, you do get a lot more, like, worth out of them. I kind of feel like most of the time he's going to be rolling 2 or 3 defense dice very easily. And then hopefully critting, right? But yeah, I don't think he's significantly hard to kill, which is why I think you should play him further away from the attackers on your opponent's team.
Yeah, I mean, I guess real quick, a few things to pile on that, and then maybe we can go into the book club. So, like you said, I think that he's fantastic for extract scenarios, where he is picking up a scenario token and then getting out of dodge with it.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that I've... a couple other pointers that I like with Spider-Man. So, first of all, I think that positioning with him is something that's going to be super important, whether it's behind terrain to get cover or taking advantage of his wall crawler, so that, you know, maybe he's going to start his turn behind a size 3 building and your opponent's not going to be able to get line of sight. And then you come out, do some things, and then decide maybe he goes back behind there, or, you know, et cetera. I think that taking advantage of his long movement stick so that he's potentially far enough away so that they have to be dedicating a fair bit of time to be coming towards him, and then they will only get, you know, potentially 1 attack off on him. And the thing that you have to be worried about or concerned about is that you don't want him going up there toe-to-toe in a position where your opponent can do an attack with the 2 actions onto Spider-Man, because that's going to be a sad time.
Yeah. Like, Spider-Man cannot handle getting crossboned for, what does he do, 9 dice?
Right.
Like, we don't want that happening. And yeah, if you want to force your opponent to actually work to attack Spider-Man, and I mean, wall crawler really does help him, because he can just dodge out over. But yeah, I definitely agree, though, that he's, of the threat fours, he's probably my favorite.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I need to get more play with Captain Marvel. I'm not sure that I'm as sold on her yet. I do like Ultron quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and speaking of Ultron, real quick, just a side note for people who haven't, don't know this yet. go to the Atomic Mass official website and check out their FAQ that they recently posted. Mm. And it has, one of the things it has is an errata for Ultron on one of his abilities, Analyze and Annihilate, so that it actually makes sense on how that power works now as a reactive ability.
Yes, that's right. Because, yeah, as a reactive ability, it's a little confusing.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a trigger, which means you can never use it.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to our comic book club. So, Greg, which comic book arc did we end up selecting this time?
So, we reached out to our fans on Facebook, our followers, fans. We reached out on Facebook and we asked for a Spider-Man story that would kind of be a good introduction or a good focus. And actually a bunch of people spoke out for the first appearance of Carnage, which is The Amazing Spider-Man issues 361, 362, and 363. And this is the 1963 run on Marvel Unlimited. Something else that a couple people asked for was maybe a quick overview of the character's backstory before we begin,
okay.
Which I think is kind of funny for Spider-Man because that it was kind of the whole joke in the Enter the Spider-Verse movie.
Right. Yeah.
And even, you know, the new Marvel introduction, like they didn't even bother giving him his origin story because it's so overdone. But I'm going to do it anyways because it's fun. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Spider-Man was a nerdy high schooler who got bitten by a radioactive spider and developed superpowers that he, you know, used selfishly until he lost his uncle to a criminal and kind of became the self-driven, you know, I need to save people. I need to use my power well. With great power comes great responsibility, Spider-Man. So he's probably Marvel's most famous character.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think who else it might be, and I can't really think who else might be in competition.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny to think about it now because it's shifted so much. But I mean, if you think back to the '90s, right? Like nobody cared about the Avengers. It was Spider-Man and the X-Men were
right.
Flat out like the most popular. I opened Disney Plus and they have a whole tab just for Spider-Man cartoons. He's had like 12 different animated series since the 90s, including the one from the 60s. So, huh. I mean, he's one of the biggest characters, right?
Yeah.
Do you want me to do the overview?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. So, this story kind of starts off, little bit of backstory. It takes place at a time where Peter Parker is married to Mary Jane. He is, oh dear, I don't remember if he's a college student right now or if he's working in a college. But it follows a story where he finally defeated Venom by tricking Venom into thinking he was dead. And basically he abandoned Venom on a deserted island and left him there thinking that Spider-Man was dead. And now he's like, so he's web swinging and there's been a rash of horrible serial killings in New York City. And it turns out it's being done by this new villain, Carnage, who has powers that seem like they're Venom. And in fact, Spider-Man thinks it might be Venom at first because characters talk about how he has a living skin. And so Peter Parker is trying to investigate and he's kind of hears about this Cletus Kasady character. So he's using his intelligence. He's doing research on computers and talking to, you know, witnesses as Spider-Man. And so he ends up going and following the trail and he finds and battles Carnage, and just completely is overpowered. Carnage has powers that Venom doesn't. And he eventually, Carnage escapes and he kind of realizes he's not going to be able to fight Carnage. So he needs Venom's help. So he gets the Human Torch, travels to the island where he tricked Venom into getting trapped. him and the Human Torch fight Venom shortly, and then convince Venom to come back and save the innocents. And Venom is really wisecracky in this, which is, you know, a little bit strange. Venom and Spider-Man end up hunting down Carnage, who they realize is targeting J. Jonah Jameson, and they end up following him to a heavy metal show where Carnage tries to inspire the metalheads to murder each other, and then they end up fighting Carnage, and they defeat him by using the metal show's sound system against him. They trap Venom and Carnage in like a sound blast, which sound and fire, by the way, are the two weaknesses of the Venom symbiote. So it's also Carnage's weakness. And then they end up imprisoning Carnage. But then it turns out that Spider-Man has tricked Venom, and Spider-Man has the Fantastic Four help him actually capture Venom as well. So he kind of betrayed Venom's trust, because he did not believe that Venom should be free, because Venom kills people in his like twisted sense of right and wrong. So it's a bit of a shorter story.
Yeah, it was a 3-comic arc, right?
Yeah, it was only 3 issues. It has a you know, it's kind of cool in that it's, I think historically for comics, it's a big deal because it's the introduction of Carnage. You get to see a lot of like what Spider-Man can do. He's scientifically minded. He knows how to do the detective game as well. I like the part where he's like going and he's talking to the witnesses, trying to like track down the serial killer, before he realizes it's a villain, a super villain. Because at first he's just trying to find the serial killer. Back when all he knows is it's horrible murders that he needs to stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting one. The very last page is a comic story I completely forgot. Where it's Peter Parker's parents show up and he's never met that, he does not remember them. These are, you know, they're coming and they kind of put themselves into Peter Parker's life and add a wrinkle on his private life. Spoilers, they're not really his parents, but
yeah, it's kind of interesting that it has a cliffhanger at the end of it, and it's just like, it says these people are coming, and then at the very end it says like, who are these mysterious people? And yeah, like, I have no clue. So I guess that's good for you to
spoil that up for y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. It was Peter Parker's parents are one of those things that writers keep trying to come in and use it, and it never works very well, in my opinion. I read a couple like fun little one-offs about it, but it's never really working very well. But this is the artist who did this is Mark Bagley, and he's pretty representative of like the art style of that time, where everyone is like super over the top muscular, and it looks pretty unrealistic in terms of, you know, like in a lot of scenes Spider-Man has this like really narrow waist that's like, yeah, half the size of his shoulders, and then he's got, like, it looks like he's got footballs stuffed under his costume a lot of times. So that's kind of the 90s style. I liked a lot of the backgrounds, actually, when I was going through it. I don't know. What did you think of this? Because this is the first comic we've done that's from the 90s.
Are you asking about the art, or?
What did you think of the whole thing?
So I don't know a ton about Venom beyond, like, I have watched the recent Venom movie.
Mm-hmm.
which was fine. I didn't think it was like an amazing movie. It made, like, it kind of shocked me how much money that movie made, but I guess that's what things related to Spider-Man do. But I don't know, I mean, as for the comic arc itself, I mean, I did enjoy it. I know even less about Carnage than I do Venom, and so it was interesting to kind of see the origin story. One thing that was, you'll probably find this humorous. So at one point, like, I'm not sure if it was Venom saying this or inner monologuing this, or if it was Spider-Man, that it was talking about, like, how Carnage was the spawn of Venom. And I kept having to, like, double check whether, like, I know that Spawn is not the comic book character or arc story, whatever, isn't a Marvel series, but I kept thinking that they were referring to
Spawn.
Spawn the character. So that was kind of funny. I did I will say that the art style, one thing that's interesting about it is that, like, I would say that they're are zero characters in these comics that I would say are aesthetically pleasing. So, I mean,
it's, yeah, I mean, it's very exaggerated, and, right, and everybody does look a little over the top. A lot of characters have very narrow chins too. Like their faces are drawn downwards almost, like it's stretched. Even like the Human Torch, who is usually drawn as like very attractive, and, you know, he's like the ladies' man, and he is drawn kind of, he looks almost like wicked sometimes. Like,
yeah, I mean, like when Peter Parker's outside of his Spider-Man suit, he certainly does not look like Tom Holland.
No. And I'll also say, this is if you're only familiar with Spider-Man from like the movies, there's been a lot of really good Spider-Man stories where he's shown as like losing his cool, you know, going a little too far, making these like superhero mistakes, that would kind of, you know, make him more of a complicated character. And you can definitely kind of see it here where he's very clearly like neglecting his marriage to be a superhero. Like at the end where he obviously is guilty for like betraying Venom at the end. No one's like super nice in these comics, I noticed. Like there's the part where J. Jonah Jameson is kidnapped and Spider-Man and Venom are like, okay, we're going to go save him. And then it shows, Robbie Robertson. And he's like, should we update Mr. Jameson's obituary? And he's like, yeah, of course, we're a newspaper. It's definitely got that 90s feel, I think, where nobody can be nice.
It does also, like, one of the funny / jarring parts at the start of the comic is Peter making jokes to his Aunt May about her going on dates with Donald Trump.
Donald Trump, yeah. Man, if they only knew, right?
Yeah, right?
That was really, yeah, jarring. And he kept doing it for like 2 pages.
Yeah, like he kept doing the Donald Trump.
Let me flip back to that. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, it's the phone. I'd better answer it. If it was Donald Trump again, tell him you already have a lunch date. Then he like goes up and still rapping with the Donald. Oh, man. And then right. And then he's like, oh, no, my friend has been murdered. Oh, geez.
So before we started recording, I thought you said that there was, kind of an interesting story behind the creation of.
Oh, yeah. So, I was reading up on Carnage. So a little bit of present information is right now Marvel Comics is doing a big event that centers on Carnage. It's called, Absolute Carnage, and I haven't read it, but I've been reading the stuff that leads up to it. So I'm assuming it's Carnage becoming incredibly powerful and like taking over other characters. But I was reading up on why Carnage was created, and apparently what was happening was Venom was becoming, well, two things were happening. One thing was Venom had his own like popularity that was really rising, where he had his own comics that did really well. And, Venom as a character was very, very popular. And then, so Marvel creative team had this idea where, they wanted to take the Venom suit away from Eddie Brock and have it like go to other characters so that you could have like, oh, here's this new character that is new Venom. So it would be like the symbiote on a new character. And it just turned out that like the way that they were managing things, they decided like, oh no, we cannot separate Eddie Brock and the Venom symbiote. Like that's our big character. It's one of our most popular characters right now. So like to give you some idea right now in 1993, it was like Spider-Man and Ghost Rider and Venom. Those were some of the biggest characters, and they all kind of had this, you know, darker edge to them. And so they, instead of changing Venom, they decided to just create a scarier Venom. And so the idea was that Carnage could be that character that like goes to different symbiotes, and it just ended up that Carnage never left Cletus Kasady. And from off the top of my head, nobody else can have Carnage because Cletus Kasady, his blood is Carnage. I seem to remember like they cannot be separated. That might have been something that they changed at some point, but
sure.
So yeah, it was just an interesting, like, the whole reason Carnage was created was that Venom was too popular to mess with. So they made a similar character in order to use that character. And in the end, it kind of did allow Venom to become more of a hero, while Venom could become the crazy murderer that Venom was sometimes.
Well, that is interesting, yeah. So, do we want to do any closing thoughts on this before we close off the main episode and go into the bonus episode?
I really like this story for showing Spider-Man and Venom teaming up. Just from like the card art alone, in the core set, like seeing Venom and Spider-Man team up is really fun. And so like that, it was nice to see that. I liked it a lot. What about you? Anything else you can think of?
I did think it was, so real quick, a couple thoughts about the end. There was, if it felt a little bit, like Deus Ex Machina when, you know, he says that he had it planned on how Mr. Fantastic was going to come in and shoot Venom with his audio gun or whatever. And so, I mean, that seemed a little bit weak to me. But I did actually think that it was... I did find interesting the ending part where Spider-Man betrays Venom, and also, like, the exchange between him and Jameson about, you know, what Captain America would have done versus what Spider-Man did in that situation. And so I'm always kind of interested in situations like that where people are confronted with moral choices and how they respond to them.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, in the bonus episode, which if you back us on Patreon, you can hear us continue to talk about our comic book club and also talk about some gameplay tips with Spider-Man. And so we thank you to everyone who backs us on Patreon. We appreciate it. You guys are awesome. Mm-hmm. Why don't we go ahead and, Greg, can you give us some information on the character and comic book arc that we're going to be focusing on next time?
Yeah, next week we are going to be focusing on Black Widow, the only Threat 2 character in the game. And
so
we
far.
Are going, so far, sure, why not? we're going to be reading the newest Black Widow comic, actually, that's come out in Marvel Unlimited. It's just called Black Widow 2019. And the story arc is issues number 1 through issues number 5. Before I recommend people read it, I do want to give a little bit of a trigger warning on this. There is some like messed up violence content in it. It's about her basically taking down a torture porn ring almost. And it's pretty graphic at some points. It's not explicitly graphic, if you know what I mean, but it is. It definitely has some content that you might not want to read. So I just wanted to point that out. If that bothers you, be aware.
Awesome. So you can check that out if you would like to, and that's what our we'll be talking about Black Widow next week in that comic book arc. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's a really good arc. It's just that that content is maybe a little bit too graphic for some people. So
cool. All right. Well, Greg, thanks for joining me, and everyone listening, thank you for sharing your time with us.
Thank you.